All right. Good morning. Hey, sometimes when I, you know why I hate sometimes technology? Okay, let me just get rid of this. Okay. A very good morning to you. You know, sometimes technology can, you know, can maneuver you. You understand? You know? So, especially when you are not, technically advanced, technologically advanced. So, yeah. So good morning, Namibia. Good morning, my dear, listeners. Welcome to Eagle FM. Tata France, thank you very much for handing over the mic on this side, and also for holding on until we sort this out. All right. Good morning, Namibia, and welcome to your number one talk radio station. And thanks for joining us at this point in time, and for selecting for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company at this point in time. So our time, it's about 12 minutes past the hour of 8. I will be, we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio, and I will be with you until 11 o'clock. So we have really, really plenty of time, to discuss, you know, pressing issues in our beautiful, country, Namibia, the brave, the land of the brave. So my name is Mike Oshaveli, and this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what really going on in terms of business, economics, and political news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear, a little witty sometimes, and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment do not necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying, spark the meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines with me, and get to the heart of the stories. So, and if you're just joining us, a very good morning to you. It's a Monday morning. Monday morning is always busy, because you have to get into the routine again, you know. So once you get into the routine, you know, things get all right. You could be on the road, dropping, you know, I think those one already at school. Maybe you're on your way to work, and if you are starting at 8 o'clock, you're already late. Yeah. So the traffic in Windhoek is becoming madness. Really, really madness. So that's why the other time they're talking about smart cities. So when it comes to papers, we are good at making documents and all that. But, you know, when it's come to implement, something that we're going to talk about today as well. So what we normally do on the show, we look at, we go back into history and looking at what happened on this day in Africa. So good morning and good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are tuning in from this beautiful, beautiful continent of ours. Welcome to On This Day in Africa. And today we are turning the pages of history back to July the 6th. Now, it's a date that carries some serious weight. Carries some serious weight, from the birth of a massive city to the heartbreak of war to the joy of freedom. July 6th has seen it all. So let's dive right in. So now we are going to start things off way back the year 969. Year 969. On this day, so the rulers of the time known as the Fatimid Caliphate, founded the city of Cairo in Egypt. And you can tell how old Egypt, I mean, Cairo it is actually. Yeah, so you can tell how old Cairo it is. I mean, 969, So the year 969. So they originally named it Al-Kahiran. I hope it's coming from Arabic or something like that. Al-Kahiran, which translates simply to the victorious, the victorious. And the victorious it was, definitely. So Cairo grew into one of Africa's most important centers for politics, culture, and of course, religion. And today, all these centuries later, it stands tall as one of the continent's largest and most famous cities. All right. So now let's fast forward to the 1960s, okay? Where we have still some people living with us today. So let's go back. Let's forward to the 1960s. On July the 6th, 1963, the African nation of Malawi took a massive step toward its national identity. Now, they wouldn't officially cut ties with British rule until exactly 1 year later, on July 6, 1964. But in 1963 was the turning point. It was the moment the country officially transitioned away from being a British protectorate called Nyasaland. So then, by then was called actually Nyasaland, and stepped into its own identity as an independent African nation led by Hastings Kamuzu Banda. Okay, those are the names we have learned when I was still, at school. Hastings Kamuzu Banda, when we are learning president. So, yeah, but not everything that happened on this day is a cause for celebration. July 6, 1967 marks a very dark chapter. It marks a really a very dark chapter, and it is the day the Nigerian Civil War, often called the Biafran War, then it began. On this day, the Nigerian military moved into a region called Biafra, which was trying to break away and form its own country. Now, the war dragged on, excuse me, the war dragged on for 3 brutal years until 1970. The human cost was devastating, and an estimated 1 to 3 million people lost their lives. And tragically, most of them didn't die from bullet, but from severe starvations. Well, it remains one of the most important and heartbreaking conflict in Africa's post-independence history. All right, but history is full of both dark and light moments. And to wrap up today's segment on higher note, we head to the Indian Ocean. We head to the Indian Ocean on July the 6th, 1975. The beautiful island nation of Comoros officially declared its independence from France, ending over 100 years of colonial rule. From that day forward, Comoros took its place on the world stage, eventually joining both the African Union and the United Nations as a free and sovereign nation. And that's July the 6th on this day in Africa, from the street of ancient Cairo to the fight for freedom in Malawi and Comoros to the sobering lessons of the Biafran War. This is the history that shape our continent. And thank you for spending this time with me. Join us again tomorrow as we look at another date on the calendar. So, good morning if you're just joining us, and welcome. Today's a Monday morning. We're already in July. We're already, we're moving slowly If you go back, that means that it's more days now we covered than the one that is left. So the year slowly by slowly, it's coming to an end. It's slowly by slowly coming to an end. All right. So July the 6th, and it's a Monday morning. So what is our thought for the day this morning? So what is our thought for the day this morning? So there's an African proverb that says, by crawling, a child learns to stand. By crawling, a child learn to stand. Nobody is born knowing how to stand, walk, or run. We all begin with a small, uncertain steps. We all begin at that. Now, sometimes we fall, sometimes we move slower than we would like. But every little bit of progress prepare us for the next stage. Maybe today you are starting a new job or building a business, studying for an exam, or try to rebuild your life after a setback. You never know. So don't be discouraged because you are still crawling. Every expert was once a beginner. And every success story started with someone, taking the first small step. So today, don't compare your journey with someone else. Okay? Focus on your next step. Keeping learning, keep learning, keep growing, keep moving forward. So because before anyone can stand tall, they first have to learn to crawl. That's your thought for the day today. And good morning to you. If you're just joining us, this is Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And all right, let's look at what we can look forward to this morning. Okay? So what can we unpack this morning? There are a couple of stuff really, a couple of things that we can look at. First of all, when last week actually there were Prime Minister actually called the has called it was last week when there was a retreat in Swakopmund. So he called on the executive director to and he called on when while they were now on the retreat, he called on executive director actually to eradicate the culture of poor implementation. Poor implementation, weak accountability, and also a wasteful public spending. Now, he was insisting that the success of the 8th administration will be judged by its ability to deliver timely, to deliver timely and effective services and complete national development project. So rather than by the volume of policies it produces. So that was bold of the prime ministers. And we're going to look at some aspect, just some aspect of what he was talking about. Maybe unpack them a little bit. So I'm going to look at that as well. Yeah, so and unpack some of the things that he mentioned. And we're also going to look and this is an interesting one because even though experts have warned African countries for many years, for decades, many African countries are still actually taking out a risk loan that they pay back with their natural resource, like minerals, okay, instead of cash. All right. So this mineral for infrastructure, what they call the resource-backed financing, these are resource-backed financing deals, actually remain a problem because they are still actually done in secret. One of the things is that they are done in secrets, and the country have very little bargaining power, and they often miscalculate the true long-term value of the resources they are giving away. So I want us to go into that because it's very, very interesting aspect there. They are really interesting, component that we look that very similar, but actually to say this is also happening, how do we know this is not happening in Namibia? So is there any mining contract that you know, that is, you know publicly what has been agreed. So it's good that we should know this. There's a lot. It's actually happening much with China, and our president and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Is it called Foreign Affairs anymore? It doesn't call it Foreign Affairs. So international relationship, they are in China's. So some of the agreement that we have could be, you know, in this direction. So let's understand what that means really, and be aware if this is happening in our country. So, and we have 3 hours, you know. So you're most welcome also. Your participation definitely is also part of this show. But there's also something. There's ChinaCo. It's a ChinaCo's 15 million acquisition of Namibia or poor cobalt project. So there's a Chinese company that actually has acquired a 15 million has acquired actually a poor cobalt project. They bought it from I don't know on top of my head. So now this is the largest cobalt deposit outside the DRC. You know, so this DRC in Africa is one of the it's the largest producer of cobalt, you know, in Namibia, and this one is the second largest, is the largest cobalt deposit outside the DRC. So that underscores China now, you know, China's strategy, a strategic push to diversify its cobalt supply and secure critical minerals amid, you know, intensifying global competition, because this is the kind of mineral that are sought after. You know, everybody wants this. So we're going to that. We're gonna unpack that a little bit. There are issues that we need to, you know, to highlight. Okay, so make sure that you tune in for all this, and also your understanding on some of this aspect. So it's mostly welcome. Make sure that you unpack that with me. And we're gonna do that when we come back after this.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikao shafathana na nana ngeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene ana ngeshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika teitha nina omayakuro nirandi toma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina kara omukwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu Moambo, dengera selma, konora heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, have our time. A very good morning to you if you're just joining us. And our time, it's about 30 minutes past the hour of 8. And if you're just tuning in, this is Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And we come into you live and direct from the Ondangwa studio. So, and I will be with you all the way until the hour of 11 o'clock. So let's do this together. So let's start off. There are a few interesting things we can pull off from what happened in Swakopmund last week. So our Prime Minister, Dr. Elia Ngurare, called a big meeting in Swakopmund last week. It's a retreat. He gathered all the big bosses of the government, you know, the executive directors, the accounting officers, you know, the people who sit in those, you know, those offices in Windhoek, and they decide how our money gets spent. These are the people now who decide how our money, you know, gets spent. And from what I'm reading, no, he laid it on the line, really. So he laid it on the line where he told them straight, the game of writing beautiful plans and then doing nothing ends now. So that game of writing just beautiful plans and then doing nothing ends right now. He says the government has been very good at producing paperwork. So, but he said that, you know, we have been good at producing very, very good paperwork, but paperwork do not build roads. Okay? Paperwork do not build roads. Paperwork does not put a roof on a school. You know, the paper does not bring water to the village. Implementation is what matters. So that was the Prime Minister said. Implementation, implementação, is what matters. And implementation, my friends, I think that's one of the disease that we cannot cure in this country. You know, it has been broken for, I think implementation has been broken for a long time. Implementation, that is where we fall flat. Absolutely where we fall flat every single time. So it's a disease that I don't know what kind of medication that we need. Talking hasn't helped really much. Maybe it's something that we, you know, it's something that we get into. Maybe that influences all of us. It's become a mindset for every one of us now. I don't know. So I don't even just want to blame, you know, certain people. But, you know, when the group of people have that kind of mindset, you cannot, if it was individual, we can pin it out and immediately pin it in the butt, you know, get rid of it easily. But it seems that it has become a systematic, structural and systemic a disease, I would call that. Now we are going to unpack some of the critical issues from his address, because this is not just another meeting where politicians shake hands and, you know, and of course probably eat some fancy food at the Strand Hotel. You know, of course, when they are there, there are nice foods there. So this is about really guts of how our country is run, you know, and sometimes we need to understand. And when I understand things, you know, things like this, we can only be able now to hold accountable the people that are spending our money. Are they spending in the right way? So, as I said, there are things that I really want us to talk about. Issues that I want to talk about coming out of what he's discussing, because when you're talking to the accounting officers and the executive directors, you know, these are the people who, you know, who decide by themselves, you know, where do they want to spend the money without authorizations. Now, okay, let's look at what the Prime Minister is really saying about policies. He talked about policies, and he made it clear, okay? He made it clear that the 8th administration, our current government and our president, is no more a new president, you know, Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, will not be judged by how many thick document they print. So that's what the minister saying. The prime minister says that we don't want to be judged by how many thick document we print. So it looks like we have document. Some of them we don't even look at them anymore. We print them and we put in the shelf. And the next thing we're looking at that, it's probably when we are going 5 years later when we had to revise again. Okay. So we have had enough documents. We have had enough documents. We have enough policies sitting on the shelves, gathering dust. So what matter now? This is what now the Prime Minister said. What matters now is whether those plans actually turn into something you can touch, something you can smell, something you can use. So that's what it matter. Now, okay, one of the problem we have as citizen of this country, I think we have grown. I think when now the Prime Minister is saying something like that, we have grown into skeptical people. You understand? We have grown into skeptical people who don't just take your word anymore. We're kind of like, okay, you're telling us this is what you want and all this. We, as people now, we have grown skeptical. Yeah, we become now skeptical people because we have traveled the same road for a while now. You know, it has been 34 years, you remember? 36 years, actually. So we have traveled that road a little bit. Okay? So how many times we kind of like, okay, how many times we have to, you know, how many times we, have you heard the government, you know, announcing a new program for housing, you know? How many times? How many times you have a government announcing a new program for agriculture, for jobs, you know? You hear it on NBC, you read it in the papers, and you get hope, You get hope. Things are going to be better. Get hope. Then 3 years pass, 5 years pass, and nothing. The houses are half built. The tractor are parked and rusting. I have seen this. I have seen tractors actually parked, you know, broken and rusting, you know. They are not being repaired. And how many cars that we see for the government and things like that. So the job never came. So, yeah, that's why I'm sad. You know, people, Namibian people has become, you know, have grown into skeptical people. Every time when you tell something, okay, unless, you know, we become like Thomas of the Bible, you know, unless I put my finger into your whatever, I'm not going to believe. I think that's what we have become. So that unless I'm touching, you know, I'm touching the project, I'm touching really what the result of this, I see there is a clinic there. I see that there is a school there. I see that the road is finished. So I will not believe. Yeah, that's what we have become. So, and that is what the Prime Minister is calling out now. He's calling out that he's saying, enough with the announcement. Get the work done. And now he's telling his executive staff. Get the work done, and honestly, well, hearing from the Prime Minister, it's refreshing somehow, you know. That's what you want to hear, not just want to hear, but you want them things done. But that's not new. It's also something that is not new. This is what ordinary people have been shouting about, you know, for years. We have been shouting about that with no agency at all. So look how far we are with so many things. So look at where we are with so many things. So that kind of agency we need. These people need pressure. They need somebody putting pressure on this because, you know, we start to live in our own, little kingdoms. You know, some of these guys become kings in their own little kingdoms, you know. They are the one who decide and they do what they want and all that kind of stuff. So the other thing is what the Prime Minister said. Let's get to the painful part. Okay. Let's get now to the painful part. Abandoned projects. So he talked about abandoned project. The prime minister talked about road that stop halfway, you know, clinic that stand empty, school with no windows, housing, you know, project that took like, you know, that looked like skeletons, you know. Yeah, so, and you know, he mentioned all this pipe, what, I know, what are pipes that go nowhere, all right? Well, I'm just putting, you know, a flesh on the bones. But, so, but he literally mentioned some of those, you know, and he called these things a blot on our landscape, you know. But let me tell you what they really are. They are graves where our tax money was buried, you know. So these are graves where our tax money are buried. Yeah? So we're not talking about, and the thing is here, so we're not talking about little money here. Yeah? We're not talking about little money used here. Yeah? Over the past several years, you know, we have seen report after report about hundreds of government projects left incomplete. Yeah? Left incomplete. I think in your region, you can actually, you know, some projects that haven't got, you know, that have taken almost 10 years or 15 years. Yeah? Or buildings that are just now have become ghost buildings. Or project that has become, you know, ghost project. At one point, we had over, we had over 400 projects just sitting there, costing billions of dollars. Billions. Yeah? And that money could, that money that could have fixed our hospitals. Yeah? Like we have now a problem of, we have now a shortage of medicines. So sometimes we can look at the present and blame, you know, and blame, oh no, we, because there's no money. What happened to the money? Because the money is actually, it's actually squandered in those clinics that are stand empty, in those roads that stop halfway, eh? In those schools with no windows, housing project that never, you know. So the money has squandered in that way. So, and that is the money that could have fixed our medical issue, our medicine issues in the hospital. Eh? That's the money that could have built classroom so your child does not sit under the tree. Huh? That's the money that could have put a tire road, put have the tire on the road so ambulances can, you know, can reach a sick grandma in a village somewhere in Kavango West, for example. Hmm? So, and what happened? And what happened when the project is abandoned? And this is where now the big problem, okay? And this is now where, you know, where we can tell the Prime Minister that it shouldn't be just talking, shouldn't be just rhetorical, you know? What happened when a project is abandoned? Nobody get punished. Hmm? The contracts sometimes walk away with full payment. The government official who signed the bad deals, the government official who have signed that bad deal, get, sometimes they just get transferred to another ministry or promoted. Yeah? The executive director that he's talking to you, that he's talking to, they just get transferred to another ministry. Yeah? Some even promoted. Hmm? And you? You the listener, the taxpayer? Are left staring at a half-built war. A half-built war. And others, you know, nothing happened. Eh? Nothing happened. Nothing happened to them. What happened when the project is abandoned, Mr. Prime Minister? What are you going to do now? That's the question. What are you going to do now if project is abandoned? Well, the Prime Minister says there must now be consequences. He said now there must be consequences for negligence. But the question is, who is going to enforce those consequences? Who is going to enforce those consequences? The same system that allowed the mess in the first place? The first system that allowed the mess in the first place, it's the one that you actually, expecting, to enforce the consequences. Now, think of this. If the watchdog has been sleeping, who wakes the watchdog? Now, who wakes the watchdog? If you can think, you can understand what I'm saying. So if the watchdog has been sleeping, who wakes the watchdog? Mr. Prime Minister? So because you said there must now be consequences for negligence. So who is going to enforce those consequences? So that's a question. That's what we want to see. We want to see some head rolling. We really want to see some head rolling because all this happened and nothing happened. No accountability at all. It's just money of the taxpayers being wasted and no punishment. Nobody gets punished. That's Namibian government. All right? So, and then he talked about the... Now, here's something that I think this one should make every Namibian very, very worried. Okay? Very worried. The Prime Minister revealed that, and this is the Prime Minister who said this. So he revealed that parts of our government's digital system have been broken into. Parts of our government digital system have been broken into. Unauthorized people got inside. All right? Okay, I'm not saying putting his head into the computer. That's not what I mean. All right? They diverted. Okay? That's English now. They diverted official communication. In a very simple English is that someone hacked our government. Okay? They were reading our emails, pretending actually to be a government official. You think maybe you are actually talking to a government official, but actually someone else who have hacked the government, system, digital system. And this is not science fiction, man. This is not a science fiction, my people. Okay? We have been seeing cyber attack already. We have been seeing cyber attack climbing year after year, getting more and more. And Namibia recorded over 1 million cyber threat in just 6 months recently. So remember the big telecom breach? You know, there was a big telecom breach, hundreds of gigabytes of data stolen just a few months ago. Not long time ago, I think there was also airport company got hit. You know, this is real. As I said, this is not science fiction. It's not science fiction. This is something that is really happening. You know, so, and the Prime Minister is calling this a national security concern, which is right. Which is right. Because if someone can get into government computer and redirect messages, what is stopping him? What is stopping them actually from, from changing records? And this is a serious thing. Sometimes people, you hear this and you think, these are simple things, but these are serious things. What is stopping them from changing record, from stealing sensitive information? Or worse, messing with our elections? They could be messing with our elections. If someone can actually, get into computer government and redirect message and things like that, these are issues that we should be concerned about. So the Prime Minister said we want a digital sovereignty. Okay? That's just a fancy way to say, look, our online house must belong to us. Eh? It must belong to us, and we must lock the door properly. So we must lock the door properly because it hasn't been locked properly. So, but again, I ask, you know, why are our digital doors so easy to kick in? They can easily kick in. We spend money on computers, but do we spend money on the people who know how to protect them? Eh? So, and sometimes we, I think especially in Africa, we tend to think that this cyber thing is only, it's only for countries like in America or something. Eh? No, these things are happening now. And as I said, we talked about telecom, we talked about, what is the other one? The airport company, you know, all this just happened. Yeah. So we wanted to be, you know, we want to be a digital nation, but we are leaving the keys under the mat. That's easy. Everybody can come and pick up that key and go into the house. So this is something that the Prime Minister is concerned about, the government is concerned about, and talking to the people that are responsible that, you know, you should national security, there is a national security concern. And that should be a real concern for all of us. So when election comes and all that, you know, and if our data are not protected, so anybody can play with it. I'm just thinking that if these people can easily steal sensitive information, they can even steal very important information. All right. So that's another aspect. There's also another aspect that's very, 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 very important. Okay. So corruption in recruitment. He also mentioned that, and this is very important. Let's move to the issue. This is the issue that I think that would break, you know, young people's hearts. You know, the Prime Minister admitted to something, and admitted to something that I think we all know, but rarely hear from the top. I think it's something that we know, you know, but it's good to hear someone talking it from the top. Yeah, so from the second in charge, so second in command. So he said people are paying money to get government jobs. And it's good he mentioned that government job. People are paying money, my friend. They are buying jobs. Eh? Some are paying with livestock. Not with their life, with livestock. Yeah, some are using political connections, of course, and that has been common. And because of this, the right person doesn't get the job, and the connected person get the job. So, and if you listen to there was something in Rundu of where the CEOs or what was that? And they were talking about how people. I think it was Samuel Flaxman who's saying, because I think he's the chairperson of that group, is saying that, you know, people, even when it comes to board members, that the board members that are actually elected to some of these board committees, you know, are not competent. Eh? They should be merit, you know. They should be merit for those who are appointed on this board, rather than just, okay, you know, could be a political connection or something like that. So yeah, people are paying, the Prime Minister saying people are paying money to get government's job. Eh? So that means if I have money, you know, I can even buy, you know, being what? What do I want to be in the government, you know? I don't know. Yeah, so now, if you are, I think if you are a young graduate from UNAM or from NAS or from IUM, so a young woman from, you know, from vocational training center in, let's say from in the north, who study hard, who stayed up, you know, late studying and who passed her exam. And then you go to an interview and lose to someone whose uncle knows somebody. Who knows somebody who knows somebody. How does that feel? Eh? Stupid question to ask. How does that feel? There was this this boy, I think he's not in a class. One day he didn't do his homework and he was asked actually to stay behind. And the teacher told her, the teacher was white and the boy was actually black. So the teacher told her, you know, education is key. You can only get somewhere in life if you are educated. And then the boy said, no, that's not true. And then the teacher asked, how come? You know, it's who you know that get where you get you somewhere in life. You know, how? Then the teacher was, how come? So, because that's not true. And then they said, that's not true. No, it's very true, arguing there. So, and then in the end he said, you know, why are you saying that? Because, you know, because my brother, you know, so he studied, but because he doesn't know anybody, because it's who you know, because he doesn't know anybody, he has got no job. Yeah, so because he doesn't know anybody, so he has got no job. So it's who you know, all right? And this is what the Prime Minister is actually saying, and is something that is actually happening. And the challenge is this, not the challenge, the caveat, would you say caveat? Yeah, for that is that the person who knows the job, the person who is competent, doesn't get the job. The connected person get the job, and they might not be even competent. So, and I was saying the young people now who are coming from, you know, who probably competent and deserve to get the job, they don't get the job because someone who knows you know, you lose to someone whose uncle knows somebody. Okay? So he just called, hey, nangpeshero pa ukakoan. Tare ningo kuchotan ningip. Eh? Eh? So? Yeah. Yeah, it's actually start the culture. And one thing that we need to understand that start the culture of the belief that hard work does not matter. So you have so many young people now. Let's say for a young person now in a university and vocational training, and you see your sisters and your brothers and your cousins sitting at home, you know, doing nothing. You know, so then you start to think, oh, why should I? As I said, this would start the culture of believing that hard work does not pay, does not matter. Eh? So it depending who you know, that's all what it matters. So it tells you that merit is a joke. The one I was talking about, merit is a joke. So, yeah, and the Prime Minister say appointment must now be based on a competence, on fairness, and integrity. When somebody from the government tells you this, it's revealed something. It just reveals something that this hasn't been happening in that way. It's a challenge that has been in the government. Yeah? And no wonder why we're not performing. These are some of the things. No wonder why we are not delivering. Yeah? Because the people that are appointed, the appointment is not based on competence, not based on fairness, not on integrity. So the Prime Minister says that should what's happened now. Competence, fairness, and integrity. Beautiful words, Mr. Prime Minister. But again, the question is, who is going to make sure this actually happen? Eh? Because the same people who take bribes for jobs are the one, are the very same people who would need to report themselves. These are very same people who need to report themselves. Would they do that? Definitely not. Definitely not. And the irony, the Public Service Commission was also there, the body that's supposed now to clean this up. And their own chairperson, the ambassador, Patrick Nandago, admitted last week that government still has a lots of issues. Lengthy, you know, recruitment processes, poor human resources management, and slow response to problems. Slow response to problems. So the house is on fire, and the fire department is still actually filling up. It's still actually filling out forms. The house is on fire, burning. And the fire department is still filling out forms, you know? So, slow process, slow responses to problems. So, those are the issues. So, yeah. And what about the other thing? The other thing now, here is and there's also an economic issue which is meta, really, which meta, especially to every small business owner listen to me right now. Now, the Prime Minister is pushing for government to buy from local suppliers, Namibian millers, Namibian builders, you know? So young people from vocational training centers who can fix schools, you know, maintain roads and run school feeding programs. So the Prime Minister is pushing for the government to do that. Now, he says the decision to support local procurement are already on paper. There is law. They just need to be enforced across every ministry and every region. There are already laws about that. And let me tell you, you know, why this is important. Right now, too much of our government money leaves Namibia. And that's the truth. Too much of our money, too much of Namibian government money leaves Namibia. A big foreign company gets a tender. They bring their workers. They buy their own material from their own country. You know? And the money goes to South Africa, goes to China, goes to Europe. And our local carpenter, our local plumber, our small construction company in Katutura or somewhere in Rundu, they sit at home with no work. Sit at home with no work. How did we get up here? How did we get here? How did we get here? So if government spent our own money on our people, we would create thousands of jobs without needing a new policy. Because it's there. We just need to enforce that. We just need to enforce what is already there. And do you remember what I said already at the beginning? Implementation is our cancer. But the question is, my people, the question is also this. I think this one thing that we should also ask ourselves very, very seriously. All right? We have the policies. Why can't we implement them? Why can't we implement them? Who is blocking this? Is it that our local businesses are too expensive when it comes now to the things that we... Are we too expensive? Is it that the tender process is rigged to favor big, you know, foreign companies or foreign firms? Is it rigged? Or is it simply that the people signing the contract do not care because their own pocket are being looked after? If your own pocket is being looked after, you don't care about, you know, the local businesses, because your own pocket is being looked after. So we need answers. Mr. Prime Minister, we need answers, not just speech, not just speech. Okay? Why is it not happening? So those are some of the things that we should, it should come out. We should understand why it's happening. In the way to move forward, we need to know the disease. For us to diagnose this, we need to know what is the disease. And it could be some of the things that I'm asking here. All right. There's also another area. There are a couple of things that the minister, actually, the prime minister has said. Another thing that the prime minister hammered on is the fact that government ministry do not work together. They operate in silos. Everyone is on their own kingdom. So you are boss, you are the king in your own kingdom. In silos. Okay? And we have seen. Now, the Ministry of Agriculture does not talk to the Ministry of Water. Of course, there's no Ministry of Water. I'm just trying to, you know, it's the same ministry, but I think you get my point. So the Ministry of Agriculture does not talk to the Ministry of Water. And the Ministry of Education builds a school, but the Ministry of Works does not connect the water. So the Ministry of Health builds a clinic, but the Ministry of Energy does not put in electricity. When you hear it from me, you're kind of like, ah, but that's how it works. That's how it works, my friend. That's how it has been happening. So you end up with a beautiful building, as we have seen them, many of them. You end up with a beautiful building that is useless because it has no lights. It has no water and no road to reach it. Maybe it's a clinic that has been built, but then no road to reach it. And many of you have seen this in your own towns. You have seen this in your own town, in your own regions. So, and this is just, and this is just basic coordination. So, put together the things that we talk about, that the Prime Minister talked about. Maybe the incompetence is because of the people that we hire, because of the system that we use, you know, of favoritism and, you know, of who you know. But this should be a basic coordination. The puzzling thing is, if a family in the village, let's just look, if a family in the village can plan a funeral together, a family in the village can plan a funeral together and make sure that the tent, the food, the transport all line up on the same day. Why can't the government ministry with millions in budget? Now, they are the one with millions in budget. Why can't they do the same for a national project? Why can't they do the same for a national project? A funeral. Family in the village can actually organize a funeral and have everything organized. But the ministry that have millions, billion in budget can't do that. Oh my goodness. Well, the answer is simple. Do you know what? The answer is very, very, very simple. There is no culture of accountability. If ministry A failed to do its part, the project actually comes to a standstill. The project stalls. But nobody get fired. So why should they care? Because there is no culture of accountability. So, and the Prime Minister say collaboration is now mandatory. All right. But you cannot just tell people to collaborate. You have to change the system. that reward them from protecting their own, from protecting their own little kingdom instead of serving the public. You have to change the system. So by just saying, hey, collaborating from now on, collaborate, you know, now it's mandatory, that's not going to do anything. That is not going to do a damn thing at all. So, as I said, you have to change the system, my friend. You have to change the system. The system that reward them, you know, for protecting their own little kingdom. When you are in the minister, you're a king in that kingdom. And that's why things don't move. Things on service is not moving. All right. So before I let you go, let me be fair, okay? It's always fair to look in a balance, you know, in a balanced way, and that's what we do here on Unpacking the Day. Okay, now, not every government worker is a lazy or corrupt, all right? Let's be very clear about that. So when we talked about this, and you know, it's not that every worker in the government is lazy or corrupt, okay? There are dedicated teachers, there are dedicated nurses, there are dedicated engineers, there are dedicated clerks in the government, you know, who come to work every day and do their best with what they have. Now, underline with what they have, okay? Underline that, with what they have. So there are people who are dedicated and competent also in what they do, all right? Not everybody. So some of these delays, and this is, we have to be very, very, and this is also now, we have to pin this now to the PM, to the Prime Minister. Some of these delays are not because people are evil or people, you know, don't want to do their work. Sometimes the budget get cut halfway through their project. Sometimes the budget just cut, you know, get cut, you know, halfway while the project is not, it's not done. It has nothing to do with the workers. So, and sometimes the procurement laws are so complicated and slow that a simple contract takes a year to sign. I'm not even saying take a year to implement. Take a year to sign. You see? And what happened to the people? You as a politician, you promise people here, promise people, no, we will start bringing, you know, water to your village. And then to sign off that project, it takes a year. Imagine, you know, to get started with the project, it's going to take about 2 years again. So sometimes the ministry asks for something, but the treasury say there's no money. So, in some way, sometimes when you look at the Prime Minister, would kind of like blaming you guys are not doing your work. But sometimes they're actually doing their work with their hands tied behind their back. So we must also ask, are we giving our public servants the tools? Are we giving our executive directors and our accounting officers, are we giving them tools and budget to do their job? Or are we expecting them to, you know, what is the right expression? Are we expecting them actually to build a castle with sense? That's what we expect them. We expect them to build a castle, but with sense. And now, you come out looking as if, they are not doing their job. No. They might be doing their job, but you haven't given them tools. You haven't given them money. You haven't given budget to do their job. So, also, we understand that the Prime Minister took office, you know, just a year ago and under a new, of course, administration. It's almost not new anymore. Some of these projects were when we look at some of the project that they found them abandoned long before he sat in that chair. So he is, in a way, cleaning up, you know, someone else's mess, you know. You're cleaning up someone's mess, and also maybe the ED and the whoever also in charge. Yeah. So, yeah, they are trying to clean up someone's mess, you know, and that takes guts from the prime minister. So, but it also means he must go beyond the speech. He must go beyond the speeches. All right? So he must go beyond the speeches. He must show us the head that rolls. We need to see the head rolling. Yeah? Go beyond the speeches, not just speeches. We must see the head rolling. Yeah? He must show us the contract who get blacklisted. Yeah? Who get blacklisted? Because they couldn't finish their job. They couldn't finish their project. They ran away with government money without finishing the project. Yeah? He must show us the bank account that get frozen. We have frozen this bank account because, you know, these people owe the government and they haven't finished the job. Otherwise, this would just be another retreat in Swakopmund, you know, with nice views and, you know, and no change at all. Yeah? Some nice views and no change. All right. So, what do you think? Eh? What do you think? If you want to engage me, 0833-66091. We come into you live from Ndangwa studio. 0833-66091. So make sure you get through us if you want to engage us on what we were unpacking about the Prime Minister's, your message to, you know, to those who are making decision how to spend our money.
0833-66091. Anageshefa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro ni randitomwa yoe, yongeshefa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki huimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, konarahe tatuimwe. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. And if you're just joining us, this is Eagle FM, and you are tuning to Unpacking the Day. Our time is 20 minutes past the hour of 9. And so we are unpacking some aspect that comes out of what the Prime Minister was actually talking last week, was talking to his staff, I would say. You know, to his staff, you know, people who normally make decisions that really changes our life or changes the country directions. So, yeah, so you're most welcome to come through and or maybe let me help you, you know, to think some aspect that we have discussed so far. And when come through and speak to me, So let me look at what we have done so far. So just maybe asking you, you know, to think of certain things that we, to put certain things into perspective that we discuss. If we had, if we have had hundreds of unfinished projects for years, you know, as it has been said, and nobody was punished. You remember when I talking about this culture, unaccountable, we have this accountability culture, you know? So nobody was punished. What makes this now? You have to ask, how does this make what now what the minister is saying? What makes this time different? Do you believe this prime minister can actually crack the whip, you know? Or is this just, you know, is this just tough talk? You know, you can have a tough talk because the newspapers are there, you know, the medias are there, you know. Is it this tough talk for the newspaper? You then got to prove us wrong that this is not for the newspapers. This is not for the media. You know, we need to see the difference. All right? Now, when the government say it want to buy local and create jobs for Namibians, do you trust that the tenders now will actually reach the small man in the street? Eh? The you that's struggling? Eh? Or will the big political connected companies still eat the whole cake? Eh? Will they still eat the whole cake? So, let's think about that. When are we, the small one, are pulled to come to the table as well? Eh? And maybe say, okay, the big one, efele pu no nao, efele nyu no na, ningenu no na valye na wanao. You guys have eaten so much now. Eh? Look what you have. Look at the property you have. In every town and every, you know, look the transport. Look in the transport sector. Look in the, you know, property sector. Look in the, you know, fishing sector. You know, the same, very same people. This is what we're asking. Prime Minister, is that what we were saying? That uno na nave pepo staff ra nava kufeko oko kakuki. Eh? Koshi kukioko. So, and if you found that someone paid a bribe, for example, something that we're talking about. So if you found that someone paid a bribe to get a government job, maybe they paid cash. It could be maybe they gave a cow, you know. Nimotei ningwa. Or maybe they used a relative name. Okay? Ngashwa motuno madina shakwati. Wete kopuno no metoipo makuti. Oh, orium norio. Aye, ame, so and so. Oh, so and so yariye. To popinando kulikucha. Aye, ame ngo yangi. Nifik oyangi, oyariye. You know, pengen didye. Kapune. Kapune kwa kupula kucha. Ay, oveli piyava. Kana sawa mwe. Mwe sawa ati kucha. Ay, ame. Ame. Toko haidula. Oh, haidula yalipi. Wete ko. Yeah, so. Yeah. So, what should happen to them? And people now that are being, you know. We want to see. You talked about it. That is something that is happening. Definitely, if it's something happening, you have evidence of that happening. And what happened now to the people that are doing it? Eh? What should happen to them? Should they lose their job? Should they be arrested? Eh? And what about the official who took the bribe? Eh? And there's also hacking that we were talking about. We're also talking about the hacking. If our government computer are this easy to break into, how safe is your personal information? In the government, how safe is your personal information? How safe is your pension data? Your pension data? How safe is your tax record? And are we, as a country, you know, taking cybercrime seriously? Are we taking it seriously enough? Or do we think, This is only a problem for the countries like America or so. Sometimes we have a tendency to think that way. I was talking to Tanya. Was it Tanya? The other time, the cyber expert. Eh? So we tend to think or ask, what is the myth that we have in terms of this? We sometimes to think that was the myth that is there. It's a problem for bigger countries, a problem for country like Europe, maybe in Europe and whatever. So that's a myth. You know. And if you had to now to measure now the success of this government, not by what they say, but what you see in your community, in your own community, in the next now 2 years, okay, what would that look like? So far, what would that look like? What is the one thing, just one thing, you know, you want to see fixed in your area, to believe that government is actually working? What is that you want to be fixed in your area, to believe that your government is working? Maybe let me know. Eh? So, and my friend, the Prime Minister has said all the right things. He has read the Riot Act to the people in power. So he has warned them that the era of paper promises is over. That era is over. But as we say in the street, action talks and lip service walks. Eh? So we have been disappointed before, you know, and we have seen big speeches turn into small results. Big speeches turn into these tiny, tiny, tiny results. So we are watching, Mr. Prime Minister, and we are listening, and we will not forget, because we are at the chopping end, you know, because we are the one at the chopping end. When the road is not finished, who are suffering? It's us. When the clinic is not finished, who are suffering? It's us. When the school is not finished, who's suffering? It's our children. So we are at the chopping end. So we're not forgetting. And I think we should learn not to forget. Okay? So that when we go to election, we haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten. So the 8th administration say it wants to be measured by what it builds, not what it prints. Okay? Fair enough. I think fair enough. So everybody should be judged by what they do. You know? So, but the measuring tape is in your hands. You now, the listeners, the measuring tapes is in your hands. You are the one who filled the potholes. As I said, we are at the chopping end. In your town, you are the one who filling the potholes. You are the one who actually stand in the line at the clinic for a whole day. Yeah? So you are the ones who wonder why the school has no desk. Yeah? So you got to decide. You got to decide if this was really a wake-up call or just another alarm clock that nobody wants to get up for. You know? All right. So, 08333.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai etetwaweza ko ombunikiri ombe ombi hukusha. Onjiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no mafa kumurungu wa indu. Weriro ngere kusha umune ondengu okuura ko imba. Una ovi umedia peke ko gondola mirongo vitatu no hambu umwe umwezi. To pika ovinki no kukara no rupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva. Oro peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Oro peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Oro peresente umirongo ivari na dano kumyeze umurongo na ivari moshimariva. Litoro rera ondengu chima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyano kife. Ashiesho imba yekupe oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uye buha kainina itako na wina rishangita jinun.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
That's a fact. That's true. This is your number one talk radio station. And thanks for joining us. And thanks for joining me. And thanks for tuning in. Our time is about 31 minutes past the hour of 9. And, yep. All right. So do come through on that. I just wanted to highlight certain things that came out of that retreat. Yeah, quite important stuff, really quite important stuff. But then, as you know, what is our cancer? It's implementation is our cancer. So let's see how the as they said, we want to know, we want to be known by the 8th administration is saying it wants to be measured by what it builds. That's a high standard, you know, that's a very high standard. Not but what they print. So, and one can say, well, fair enough. You put the standard and we're going to measure you by that. That's the kind of standard that we want to measure you by what you have built, but not by what you have on papers or what you print out. All right. So, yeah, the measurement is in our hands. So wherever you find yourself. All right. So, okay, let's move on to something. So you are mostly welcome to come through. If you want to comment on that or you want to add, or maybe you are part of the group. So there was someone that I tried yesterday, you know, he promised I'll come through to you. I will come through to you, you know, because I was asking what happened in that meeting, you know, so what are the things that has been discussed? Yeah, so, all right. So possibly, got him. Yeah, so it's 1 point. Yeah, so it didn't come through. All right, so let's move to something else. We're moving now to something else, okay? And so, and we're looking at Zimbabwe. We're looking at Zimbabwe, but something that it's just the example of what we're looking at. It's a story in Zimbabwe, but we're applying it to what happened also in this country. So now Zimbabwe, our neighbor, to the where is Zimbabwe? It's to the east, yeah. Is talking to China, like we are now in China right now, you know. It's talking to China Railway. Yeah, they are talking to China Railway. They want new roads. They want new railways. And they want to fix their transport system. So, all right, they want to now fix their transport system. Now, the African Development Bank says Zimbabwe needs $34 billion to make this happen. Okay? So, they want to fix their transport system, but the Development Bank said you need you need $34 billion. So when you're talking about dollars, we're talking about US dollars. $34 billion US dollars to make this happen. $34 billion, that's money Zimbabwe now simply does not have in its pocket right now. So you need this amount of money to fix these problems that if you don't fix it, it's just going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger and get worse, and it would impact your economic activity, your economic growth as well. So you understand? So Zimbabwe has to make a decision. But under Zimbabwe's soil, okay? Under the soil, what do they have? Oh, there is plenty. Under the soil, there's plenty. Under the soil, they have lithium, they have platinum, they have chrome, they have gold. You know, some of the most valuable minerals in the world today. These are some of the most valuable minerals in the world today. So, they got thinking. Vakwetu. Oshiri shiri, atufingo njala. You know, nini mairi medweye nashtaini. Eh? And the thinking coming through Harare is this. Why not use what is under the ground to pay for what is above the ground? You know, use what is under the ground to pay what is above the ground. Let mineral buys the road. Let the mineral lays the railway tracks. Simple, right? So that's the solution. Now, my people, my dear listeners, that's exactly where the danger lives. The word simple, you know, I use the word simple. That's where the danger lives. Because this story has been told, you know, before. We have seen this movie. This is not the first movie we are watching. We have seen these movies and we know how it ends. We know how the movie will end. And yet, here we are again, country after country singing or signing deals that swap underground wealth for the concrete and steels. Yeah? So here we have another country in Africa that are signing deals that swap your resources, your mineral resources underground, your underground wealth for concrete and steel. Now, the question the writers are asking is brutal but fair. Okay? Has Africa learned nothing? Has Africa learned nothing at all? Haven't we learned anything at all? So that's a question the writer's asking. Now, let's look at this more, dear. Let's look at this more in depth, okay? We're going to look at this more in depth, and I'm going to paint a scenario for you, okay? Let me paint a scenario for you to understand what we're trying to get at, okay? Let me paint a picture. All right, imagine you own a big piece of land, all right? You own a big piece of land. Your grandfather actually left it to you. So there's a family, there's inheritance to that. So your grandfather left it for you, but your house is falling apart. And the roof is leaking, and the road to your house are full of potholes. And you have no cash in the bank. So all this is, if the rain comes now, you know, the roof is leaking and, you know, and the road is so terrible. So, and you got no cash. You got no cash in the bank. So your neighbor comes to you and say, hey, listen, man, I will fix your roof. All right. I'm going to fix your roof and I will tie your road. Okay, I will even tie your road. I'm not just going to give you a gravel road. I'm going to tie your road. But in exchange, this is now your neighbor, but in exchange, I want a piece of your land. A big piece, okay? So I will farm it my way. I will farm it in my way, sell the crops that I'm growing on that land, and keep the profit until I feel I have been paid back enough. So you understand? You understand the implication of that? Now, so you get a roof. Now your roof has been made, okay? You get a new roof, and you feel proud of that. You get a smooth road. You feel proud of that. But the land, all right, it is gone for decades. It's gone for years. It will be, or maybe forever. You never know, okay? Maybe the agreement. And here's the catch. So here's the catch. You do not even know exactly how much your land is really worth. Eh? Because, do you know the reason B? The person who valued it is the same person who want to build you, who actually want to build your roof, who want to build your roof, isn't it? So it's the very same person who is actually paying himself, actually valuing what he thinks is worth, you know, to pay you. So, now, that, my dear listeners, is the heart of what they call resource-backed financing. Fancy name, but it's a simple trap. resource-backed financing. Now, Zimbabwe Finance Minister, the Finance Minister Mthuli Cube, you know, was just in China for the World Economic Forum. He sat down with China Railways, and he told reporters they are exploring what he calls resource-linked debt instrument. Okay? So basically, Zimbabwe wanted to build roads and railways, charge tolls, you know, on those roads. And if the toll money is not enough, the mineral will cover the rest. So the mineral will act as a security, as a guarantee, you know, the security, the fallback plan. Okay? So on paper, it sounds clever. Okay, sounds clever, but let me take you back in time. I'm going to take you back in time. You remember, we have Angola did this with oil. Angola exactly did this with oil. For 20 years, Angola gave oil to China to pay for the road, hospitals, and railways. Over $40 billion in deals. Over $40 billion in deal. And yes, something got built. It's not that nothing has got built. Something got built, okay? But Angola also ended up owing so much money that when oil prices actually crashed in 2014 and 2016, the whole country nearly fell over. So the oil they had promised was suddenly not worth what they thought, you know? So when actually around that time, when oil prices actually crashed in 2014 and 2016, so now what they thought was worth is no longer worth what they thought. And because the contract were locked away in secrecy, that's what we're talking about, because the contract were actually locked in secret, the Angolan people did not even know what their leaders had signed until it was too late. Until it was too late. So by 2018, Angola then had to stop making new oil for loans deals. So they stopped those. And they have learned, of course, the hard way. And I think it was also the time they came out of OPEC, if they did. I think at the same time, more or less, yeah. So, yeah, Angola had to stop making new oil for loan deals. So then, there's DRC. Then there's DRC, our neighbor also, other neighbor, but a little bit further, but it's our neighbor as well. You have heard of, Sicko mines, you know, Sicko mine deals. Yeah? You have heard those Sicko mine deals. $9 billion at first, I think $9 billion at first, and Chinese company got mining rights to copper and cobalt. They got a mining right to those copper and cobalt. And in exchange, they promised to build what? To build roads, schools, and hospitals. So we're talking about resource-based, you know, financing. And the deal was so secretive that even the Congolese parliament struggled actually to get the full details. It was so secretive. So years later, when independent experts look at the numbers, okay, they found that the DRC was actually getting far less than it should have. So we hold a kuningi ni mapako shita fula. Onno deshiningi keshishi. So later on, the expert, when they looked at the numbers, they found that the DRC was actually getting far less than it should have. So the infrastructure was built, yes, but at what cost? minerals were living by the truck load, you know, trucks were and local people asking, hey, where are the jobs? Where are the schools that were promised? So it took years of pressure and renegotiation. So before the DRC managed actually to squeeze more value out of that deal. And even now, as we speak, critics say the Congolese people are still not getting their fair share. They're still not getting their fair share. So, yeah, so that's so when now, when I read that Zimbabwe is now walking down the same road, you know, I have to ask why? You know, why Zimbabwe? Why? Zimbabwe has actually been there. They have been there before. They have been here before. They have. You remember? Back in 2006, they took a loan from China tied to the platinum deposits. Okay? And the agricultural equipment was supposed now to transform our farming in Zimbabwe. So the platinum was the security. All right? But did Zimbabwe agriculture transform? Did it transform? As you know it now. Did ordinary farmers feel the benefit? Or did the country just wake up with less control over its own riches? That's what happened. So that's exactly what happened. Now, here is the thing. Zimbabwe is talking about lithium. All right? It's talking about lithium. Lithium is the new, you know, it's the new gold, if you like. Lithium is the new gold. It's what powers electric car batteries. The whole world is chasing it. So, and Zimbabwe has some of the biggest, lithium deposits in Africa. So, what happened? Chinese companies have already poured over $2 billion in Zimbabwe, in Zimbabwean lithium mines since 2021. So the Chinese are already deeply inside Zimbabwe's mining sector. So now they might also build the road and railways. Think about that, you know. So the same country that mines your lithium will also build your roads. And the money you owe them will be paid back using the same lithium they are helping you to dig up. You see that cycle. It is a cycle. And the question is, who is really in the center of that cycle? Is it Zimbabwe or is it the foreign companies? So what do you think? Now, the minister, Kube, say Zimbabwe will also look at toll revenue from the road. This is a story that I think the similar thing that Ampanda was... in the parliament, Professor Mpanda was telling Nekunti that you shouldn't dare think about it. All right. A very good. Oh, we miss you. We lost you. So you're welcome to come back. You may come again. 0833-66091. So do come back. Yeah. So in Kube. So as I said, he was also look at the toll revenue for the road. And I was just saying that this is something the Professor Mpanda was telling Nekundi that don't even dare. So that's a good thinking from when you're looking at it from business point of view. It's a good thinking. If a road makes money, it can pay for itself. All right? It can pay for itself. But if the road, it doesn't. If it doesn't make money, if it doesn't make enough money, the mineral now must cover that gap. That's now what their strategy is. that, well, if the road, it doesn't cover much, you know, it doesn't make much. Now the minerals, you know, must cover the gap. And now who decides how big is the gap? Eh? So who decides now how big is the gap? It could be the company now that actually mining, who decided how much lithium is worth? Eh? Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking.
Bom dia, família.
Ah, bom dia. Como está?
Ah, tudo bem, obrigado. Estou ali.
Ah.
Tá bom, não está frio, não. Não está frio, tá bom.
Estou bem. Estou muito bem. Estou fixe.
Tá tudo bom. Já está fixe, já.
Está fixe.
Yeah.
So, how's the morning?
Ah, the morning is good. Not cold like this 3-4 days past, but yeah. Today is better.
Yeah. I know it's not cold anymore, man. Their life is not the same. I remember, you know, when we lived in Windhoek, and you sometime, you know, in Klein Windhoek, and you opened the tap, it was completely freezing. You know, no water coming out. You know.
Yeah, you know, in my mind, I was busy thinking about the Pongombada.
Yeah.
I want to. I might just to add in your conversation about these African countries and what they are, what we are not doing well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about you mentioned about DRC. So, DRC, ne?
Yeah, DRC and Angola as well. You know.
Yes.
So they.
So longer you are not doing well in your geopolitics, forget about eradicating poverty in your country. In South Africa, instead of them are doing well, chasing trying to eradicate this war we have in Africa, they should just stop this kind of thing that they are doing in their country, chasing out of African people in their country.
So, what I wanted to look at, maybe ask your opinion on that, is like, you know, countries are using, they are swapping their resources because they don't have money to, one of the things that country need is infrastructure, which is actually the same thing here in Namibia. We need a lot of infrastructure. We need to improve our railways. We need to improve our road networks. Even if they are good, we need to improve them. There are a lot of infrastructure that we need. We need to extend our port and things like that. So now what country have done is that they found it difficult getting now loan, maybe from developing bank or from the IMF or from World Bank. So because of the restrictions. Now what they do, they think, okay, we use our minerals. Now we use our minerals. So the agreement is between the country that provide you with the infrastructure, and they dig out your, and they take your minerals. Now the problem with that is that the one who decide how much is worth is the one who actually building the infrastructure for you. You are not the one who actually decided we're going to give you this much. They are the one who actually said we are going to dig out how this much. And what happened is that much of what they do when they build your road and bridges and all these kind of things is not worth of much they take out. Okay? And in the year, in 5 years or 10 years, they depleted your resources. And we keep doing this. And we have an example of DRC, and we have an example of Angola. Of course, there are infrastructure that has been built, but then your resources have been exhausted.
You know, when they realize you are not united in political whatever.
Yeah.
Them is there where they come and try to play game with you because you are not united. So you are signing things under the tree. Now for them it's good because they are taking out of some, because they debate the case before they came here. It's like, do you have enough data for this country? No, we don't have because it's difficult. So why? Because there's a APCD. Okay. when they get started with, because they have problem of them uniting themselves, now we can clean up their resources. But yeah, when you are united, it's difficult for them to come and one guy come sign this kind of contract, you know.
Yeah. But if you are selling your house, shouldn't you have done your little bit of your research in terms of how much, shouldn't you have done your evaluation of the house so that you understand how much you will get, rather than someone, the one who you are selling to is the one who is telling you how much your house is worth, you know? So you become, you stay in a stronger position when you understand what you have. And in most cases, we don't have the data. We don't have, you know, we don't know what we have. And that becomes a problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a really, really risky. So whenever you are not united, it's difficult for you to eradicate poverty in your country. And they play game with you. It's okay. Yeah. These guys are not united. Let us just get up. So what we are supposed to do, like South Africa. So South Africa are supposed to do more than what they are doing today. To try to ceasefire all of these African countries to sell in the country and united to see how can we go now. If you have this kind of war, my brother, forget about eradicating poverty in your country. Forget it.
Yeah.
If you have this kind of concept of political, you forget about the IB, and the IB standing in nationality and immediate, but I forget about that. My brother, forget for us to eradicate poverty in our country. Look now, Namibia, we are so few, but that the most of the people living in checks without no water, no electricity since 1991. You think that we are doing well like that?
Yeah.
No, we should sit and see where's the problem. I like it when you say the Prime Minister went to Robsby and asked them.
Mm.
In paper, things are looking better, but in the ground, things are looking wrong.
Yeah.
It's true. What he said, I agree with him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. Mm.
Right. Let me end up there.
All right, man. Thanks for coming through. Yeah?
Thank you.
Yeah. 0833-660-91. 58. It's minute past in the hour of 9. And we still have another whole whole hour to go. All right? So you're welcome. You are most welcome to come through. And this is the platform where we, you know, we don't just talk. We look at really issues that affect our lives on a daily basis. They're, you know, bread and butter issues. The whole idea, when you listen to, maybe sometimes people don't understand what we stand for as Eagle FM. So we want you to participate in Namibia's economy with an understanding. Okay? We bring you people who understand that. And sometimes we do research with the programs that we do research on certain things that are happening, and really especially on here on Unpacking, and unpack it, you know, in the way so that it, you know, this is being done. This is what is taking place in our country. What is this all about? All right. So there are certain things that you may, you know, for people find it very difficult to listen. And it's very difficult sometimes to listen to important things. You know, things that are not important are more attractive. They are more, you know, entertaining in terms of it keep you, yeah, you know. But what you're missing sometimes, especially with a lot of programs that comes your way, what you're missing sometimes, it's going to bite you in a year, in a two or something like that. You're looking at, we would have made that decision, but because of the information that you haven't informed yourself, you didn't listen to the program that actually probably, you know, explained those things to you. So you are where we are, you know, we are where we were. So we can only make a difference in a discourse, And we can only make a difference in this country when we are all informed. You know, a citizen that informed would actually drive the direction where your democracy lead. You know, you the one who leads that. Yeah, I was talking about the swap. Okay, let me put it in simple terms. Not use the financial word. A swap of infrastructure, or our needs that we have as a country, we swap it with the minerals that are underneath, the wealth that is underneath. You don't know how to take it out, and you ask someone. Someone actually comes and said, "Hey, all right. Oh, you want to build hospitals? You want to build schools? You want to build railways and roads? Okay. Well, that's fine. I believe you do have cobalt. You do have, copper. Yeah. Some people said I do. Oh, okay. We'll come and see. We'll come check around. We'll take our magic machines, you know, and where is those ones? And then they realize. Sometimes even the deposit that they tell you, this is how much deposit that is there. So now you don't even know whether that's true because you don't know. You see, hey, atronga no puffy man. When you look at it in a very bigger picture, atronga no puffy on my meme, you know? Yeah, so. So, Kube says, Zimbabwe also look at the toll revenue from the roads. It's not just, so the mineral wealth won't be not just the guarantee, but we're trying to come up with if the road makes money, it can pay for itself. So that's why they have this idea of toll revenue. But if the road, it doesn't make money, enough money, then you know, mineral must cover the gap. Okay? So I'm discussing this because in some way we have done this. Okay? We honestly have done this. So sometime I said you ask the questions who decided now when you think in terms of these deals are done, who decided how big is the gap is in terms of who decided how much lithium is worth of much of what the Chinese company is doing? Who checked the quality of the road constructions? You know, who makes sure the railway line is actually built to last? Eh? Not just built to look good for the television cameras at that time. You know, so this is where the silence actually becomes louder, eh? Because these deals are almost always signed behind the closed doors, eh? Behind the closed doors, and sometimes we're not even involved. We don't even know what is the content of those. The civil society group do not get to see them, you know. Opposition party do not get to see them, eh? A very good morning to you.
Just quickly to add up with what I'm saying, because you say something very important and we don't consider it as the important thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Why the roads, sometimes they don't stay for longer. Most of African countries, they're not like Namibia. Namibia, we have like a maintenance of roads. When the roads don't rain, then you see a municipality giving tender to small companies to fix roads. So yeah. Most of these countries, they don't have a maintenance road. That's why you see the road is done by the Chinese, but that is potholes, the road is killing the system. And who's going to suffer? It's the nation. You know? The nation is going to suffer because you don't have access anymore to run, to fix, go to the hospital or go to buy your product, come here, sell it, you know? This kind of thing. So, yeah. Most of the country need to wake up to say, when the road is done by Chinese whatever company, let us create a system in our government to have a maintenance of roads. That they were so we are looking for a lot of, you know, most of these African countries, they don't have this kind of thing, which Namibia is having. That's why Namibia now, if you go to Africa, is the most beautiful network roads we have. Why? Because we have maintenance. If we could not have maintenance,
yeah,
today we could find a big problem in our road.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just to add up, that, Michael, you can continue. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Yeah. All right, yeah. So, as I said, these deals are normally done in, you know, in you know, signed behind closed doors. Civil society groups have no idea, don't get actually to see them. Opposition, even opposition party, don't get to see them as well. So, and even the people who sometimes, even the people whose land, let's say, for example, the railway will cross. It will cross, the railway will cross through this land. Even the farmers, maybe whose crops will be affected, they are the last to know. They are the last to know. They are not part of this, of these discussions from the very beginning. So in Namibia, we have a saying that, or maybe it's not a Namibian saying. So the details are in, the devils are in the details. You know, so I hope it's a Namibian saying. The devils are in the details, but when the details are hidden, eh? When the details are hidden, how do you fight the devil? Eh? How do you fight the devil when the details are hidden? So let's look at this. Okay, let's also look at this in a balanced way. Okay, I always want to bring, you know, the other side. That these people are not just doing this because they have no clue what they are doing. So, yeah, let's look at the balance way or the different side, because good debate sometimes depends. It means hearing every voice, isn't it? You know, that's why I'm waiting for your voice. All right? I'm waiting for your voice. Now, the government in Harare would say this, okay, that... And this is, you know, this is really what many governments actually experience, that we are tired of waiting. Now, the World Bank is not rushing, you know, it's not rushing to lend us money, you know, and the IMF has conditions we cannot meet. Our credit rating is poor. We need road to move our goods, you know, we need railway to get our products to the port, you know. The government would say this, we need this. And we sit, if we sit around waiting for a perfect financing, which might not come, you will wait forever. So our minerals are underground doing absolutely nothing. Yeah? So at least this way, you know, we turn them into something we can use. So, our children can see and touch. Eh? And that is not a crazy argument to have. In fact, it's a very human argument, you know, and every parent wants to fix the house. So, yeah. So, and especially when it comes to politicians, you know, they want to have things that, you know, people can see and touch. Eh? And they see that, oh, you have done something. But then the critics step up and the critics say that you are not turning mineral into roads. So you are turning mineral into debt. And they're looking at a hidden debt. It's not like the debt that does not show up on the budget the way normal borrowing does. So it's a debt that your children will still be paying when you are long gone. So, because the road and that road you get, they are often built by who? Often built by Chinese, using Chinese equipment and with Chinese companies and collecting the profit. All right? And then the local jobs, what happened to the local job? Very few. Very few, especially when it comes to mining, local skills, land, even fewer. So maybe you mostly have the laborers who are actually just doing temporary work. Once the project is finished, they are also, it's not a job that is more permanent. So you're giving away your lithium, but your own engineers still do not know how to build a railway. So you give away your platinum, but your own construction company get no contracts. They don't get contracts. It's like selling your own cow to buy milk. But the milk comes from someone else's farm. You understand? That's what the critic says. Now, then there is the ordinary Zimbabwean. What do you think? Would they care? They are, think they are immediate because of the, when you get Ngolimo problem, you're looking only at the immediate need. When you are hungry, you know, you don't think of tomorrow. You only think about, I need food now. And when you are maybe full, it's when you think, okay, will I have something to eat tomorrow? But for now, you know, you want things, you want to eat. So, and that's what you may find people in that situation at the moment. The man on the street in Harare or Bulawayo, you know, he will say, I just want to get, you know, I just want to get to work without my car falling apart, you know, on the dirty road or road full of potholes. Yeah? I want my children to have a future. Yeah? If a Chinese company builds me a road, at least I have a road. Yeah? But if I get a job on that road, will I get a job on that road? Well, will the toll fees that they're talking about be so higher that only the rich can afford to drive on it? So that could be the case. So, and if the mineral runs out, for example, or if the price of lithium crashes because some other countries start producing more, what happened then? Do the Chinese take the road back? Do they take the mine? Who protects me as an individual? So those are the questions that one, you know, as an ordinary citizen would ask. Yeah? And also, to be fair, with the Chinese, they say, what about China? So let's be fair. China does not force any country actually to sign these deals. African government come to them. We go to them. China would say, we are willing to take risk that West, maybe the West Bank, the way we should be borrow money, will not take. They will not take actually that risk that we are taking. Yeah? That's what they would say. So we build infrastructure in place others ignore. Maybe this is where the European or whatever, this IMF and World Bank and Development Bank, they would say, no, we not fund that. And the Chinese, they would say, okay, we'll take that risk. Yeah? We'll take that risk. So we do not lecture you about democracy. Others tells you, no, we can't pay, we can't fund you because you are not democratic enough or something like that. We do business. And yes, we want your minerals. They will say, yes, we want your minerals because our factory need them. All right? Our factory need them. But we also build your roads. Is that not fair swap? That's what would the Chinese would say. That's a fair swap. We want your minerals. We build you. We leave you with us. We leave you a road. But now, he leave you with a road and you have nothing in the mine anymore. So what would you use the road for? Okay? Yeah. So you're asking, is that not a fair swap? A fair swap? A fair swap is only fair if both, and this is a serious one, okay? A fair swap is only if both people know exactly what they are swapping. In this case, it's not a fair swap because somebody doesn't know how much is swapping. Now, if I trade you my goat for your chicken, okay? I'm trading you my goat for your chicken, and I think that my goat is worth 5 chicken, but you tell me, it's only worth 1. That is not trade. That is actually trickery. Yeah? So, and in most cases, this is what happened. So we are trading a goat for a chicken. And we know that a goat is worth about maybe, let's say, 5 chicken or 10 chicken. Yeah? But you are being told, no. We're only going to, you know, my goat is worth your one chicken. You see? Is that trade? Much of the thing, and look at it. I'm putting it more idiomatic, all right? If I can put it there. Think of it this way. How much actually, even when you look at our mining, how much actually is being loaded out of our country, and how much actually the royalties and tax revenues that are paying, are they really worth of what they are taking out? This is what I'm trying to explain to you. Sometimes we know that what is our goat, that's why I'm giving an example of a goat. My goat is worth 5 chicken or 10 chicken. But you are told, no, your goat is worth, your worth is worth one chicken. So, and you agree to that. Okay. All right. So, and then we said, well, we go to someone who is actually, you know, we can trade a goat against a chicken. And because you don't want to lose that business, then we're like, So, and on top of that, they would come up with other things that would indicate that, you know, there's no value for this, you know, to where we're selling. And what happened? Your tax revenue goes still down, and your royalties. Sometimes they don't even pay. So, and the problem with these resource-backed deals is that African side often does not know the true value of what they are giving away. That's the problem. Resource-backed deals, we don't know the true value of what we are giving away. The contracts are too complex for our understanding. And sometimes the mineral prices are too unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen in 2 years or 3 years, not even in 6 months. Maybe the price will go down. Now you are in trouble. And the future is too uncertain in most cases. So, yeah, now, let's take this. I have been talking about Zimbabwe for a while. So let's bring it home now, because you're sitting in Windhoek or in Wavish Bay or Shakati or Katima Muli, and you are thinking, okay, this is a Zimbabwe story, so what? Why is it relevant to us? It is actually relevant. I will tell you why. And I will tell you why, definitely. Namibia, we are sitting on some of the most valuable mineral in the world. And believe me, we will be tempted. We are sitting on a valuable mineral in the world. We have uranium, we have lithium as well. We have also lithium, maybe not in the same quantity as the one as in Zimbabwe. We have lithium, we have rare earths, we have copper. And the whole world is knocking on our door. They are knocking on our door. America wants our critical mineral. China wants them. Europe wants them. Everybody wants them. Everyone is talking about green energy, electrical cars, you know, and batteries. And we, just like Zimbabwe, have infrastructure gaps. Remember, we also have infrastructure gaps, like Zimbabwe. We have roads that need fixing. We have railways that need upgrading. And this is not a joke. That need upgrading 10, not even 10 years. Let's say, for example, 20 years ago. And we have a port. Our port, even it has been upgraded, we have a port that need expanding. Given all what we're going to do, the oil that is coming, the whatever. So we need a port that needs expanding. So we need jobs. That's another thing. We need jobs and we need development. So as you can see, we have infrastructure gap. So the temptation will come. The temptation is to say, why not give them some mineral in exchange for a fast railway line, for example? Eh? Let's give them some minerals in exchange of that. Eh? The temptation to take the shortcut, there will always that temptation to search for its cut. The temptation to mortgage our underground wealth for a visible project above the ground. Remember what I said at the beginning? Now, and when that temptation knock Namibia, we had better be ready with the right questions. We had better be ready. Because here is the truth also. Here is the truth. It is not the mineral for infrastructure. It's not that the mineral for infrastructure can never work. All right? It's not that it can never work. It is that it's almost never work for the ordinary people when the contracts are secrets. Yeah? The negotiations are one-sided, like I just displayed for you. And the long-term value of what is being given away is never properly counted. So that's when this is never work. That's where almost never work for ordinary people who should be benefiting from this. So what should we demand then? If Zimbabwe goes ahead with this, what should we as neighbors and as fellow African be watching for? What should we be learning from that? Now, show us the contract. This is what the transparency, be part of the EATI, whatever that company, you know. Show us the contract, every page. If the finance minister has signed a deal that ties our lithium to Chinese railway, the people must see the terms. We must see the term, not a summary, not a press release, the actual numbers. Eh? We want to see that. Onslaught, that sin. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? We need to see that. So we need to see how much lithium is promised. How much of we know any of the contract, any of the deals that are here? How much of them we know? They're all done under secrecy. Under closed doors. Public, even maybe the opposition party don't even know. Their civil society don't even know. So how much lithium is promised to for you to build our road, for you to build our railway, for you to expand to extend our port? Remember what we have discussed earlier. At what price? For how many years? So years are extended. By the time they leave, there's nothing. The resources have been depleted. What happened with the price if the price drops? What happened if the railway is not built on time? Transparency is not a luxury. It's just not a luxury. It is the difference between a good deal and theft. Honestly, theft. Because some of these things are stealing daylight. It's kind of like, there's an agreement, there's a contract, there's an agreement, there's a deal. But it's really theft. Umbuje kwa irafirofiru. Ufuthi. The second thing is who built the road now? If the answer is only Chinese company using mostly Chinese, you know, workers, then we are not getting development. Yeah? We are not getting development. We need local content. Something that we talk about all the time, but we don't seem to put the pen, we seem to put the pen on paper, but to put the shuffle on the ground. So we need Namibian companies, Zimbabwean companies, African hands on the tools. We need skill transfer. That's what we need. Otherwise, when the Chinese leave, the road is tar. The road have a tire, but the knowledge is gone. The knowledge is gone. And the question is, who owned the minerals? So who owns the minerals at the end? And we're going to look at one, so that's a very important question. Who owns the mineral at the end? Is Zimbabwe selling the right to mine? Are they selling the right to mine? Or is it just using future income as a guarantee? And these are two very different things. One is like renting your house, and the other is like selling the title deeds. You know, if you sell the title deeds, you cannot change your mind later. It will be too late. It's going to be too late. Your grandchildren will inherit a country with no lithium left in the ground for them. It's going to be too late. So, and what is the true cost? If Zimbabwe borrows money using minerals, all right, and the minerals are worth 10 billion, but the road only costs 2 billion, for example, where does the other 8 billion goes? Who decide the value? An independent auditor? Or the same people who want the deal to happen are the one who decide the value? So hopefully, I hope that there are sometimes there are MPs that are listening, and that might change your direction when you're looking at certain things. That's what we want to influence with the content that we bring. So when we ask questions, the question is just for you to think and really, grow a seed in your mind to question things. I'm not only talking to MPs, I'm talking you as well, that we, when I ask questions like these, I'm growing a seed. I'm putting seed in your mind, to start looking at things differently, to start questioning things. And also, is there no alternatives? Is there no alternative? Why is Zimbabwe not raising money on the open market? I'm not talking about matter. I'm talking open market. You have, institution where you can get. Why aren't the big international bank not lending? Is it because Zimbabwe's economy is shaky? And if so, will giving away mineral fix the economy? And that's a very important one. Now, if the economy is shaky, now, will giving away mineral fix the economy? Because all what you do, you're only now using this temporary measure to fix the problem, but actually creating a longer term problems as well. So what you're doing, you just hide the problems for a few more years, but you are putting your children in debt, as we said. You're putting your children in debt. You are risking the future of your children. You see, the report I read asks a painful question. It really asks a painful question. Has Africa learned nothing at all? Has Africa learned nothing at all? And I think the honest answer is this. Some people have learned, Some people, economists have learned. The researcher have written the reports. The activists have shouted from the rooftops. But the people who actually signed the deals, for some reasons, the people who actually signed the deals, the political elites, they keep making the same choices. They keep making the choices. Why? Because the pressure, and this is very important. This is very important, even if we don't want to face it. It's the truth. Because the pressure to build something visible before the next election is stronger than the pressure to protect something invisible that will only matter maybe 20 years from now. So sometimes it's knowing what is the right thing to do. Sometimes the right thing to do is that, okay, let's say for example, Would you, if you were president, and you can you make a decision like, okay, we know the exploration has been done. We know that we have oil. We know what we have, these minerals or whatever. Okay, let's leave it. Let's prepare our people. You know, no, we're not gonna take, you know, those who are gonna only pay for who actually taking about 95% ownership. We're not gonna take that. So, because they're taking everything, okay? Well, what they pay is just, you know, royalties and tax revenue. So let's hold that and wait for 10 years when we prepare ourselves, okay? Or 20 years, by then we will be ready. For now, let's start preparing ourselves that by 10 years from now on, we will then have our own people doing the work, and we will have equipment, we will have everything, we're preparing. So, or would a politician actually would do, let's have someone who actually dig now so that, you know, the benefits are quicker now. Someone is getting more money. The foreign company is getting is getting out of our resources. But it's visible now. I can look as if I have achieved something right now. But I'm putting my future, the future of my country, the future of my children, into jeopardy. I'm sabotaging the future of my children. Literally. So that's why I say, they keep making those same, as I said here, who actually signed, the people who signed these deals, they are political elites. They are politicians. They keep making the same choices. Why? Because the pressure to build something visible that they want now, something being seen, becomes something that would help them for the next elections. So therefore, this is the whole idea, you know, let's have something, that is much stronger than the pressure to protect something invisible. So if you decided, okay, let's now have being people being educated in terms of this, and we can have actually this, in that's invisible, and that will only it will not be seen now, it's only be seen in 20 years to come or 10 years to come. That it doesn't create any pressure. So it doesn't create, you know, because you want, when you go to the election, you have something tangible. You can see, you have something to list. You see, like, this is what we have done. This is what we have done. This is what we have done. And sometimes this proceed our, this, and we need to guard against that, because sometimes these elections for me to be elected proceed the country's development. All you care about is that when I go, you know, by 5 years from now, I can show that, you know, I have a quick wins. But that quick wins actually put your country in jeopardy. And sometimes that becomes the culture. And that's why we're not going anywhere. The reason sometimes we're not going anywhere, because even me going on there, I'm doing things that make me be reelected, make me, my party be reelected to be in power. So I have to market, I have to do things that market me rather than things that actually important for the development of the country. So we need to guard against that. Yeah. So it is easy to cut a, you know, as I said, it's easy to cut a ribbon on a new road. You understand? It's hard to explain to voters why you did not actually sign a deal that would have built that road quickly. So you understand? To explain to people, no, you know why I didn't sign these deals, because of, you know, but it's easy for when you're cutting a ribbon, they can see. The opposition will say you are failing. the media would say you are incompetent. We would be on you. The public would say you are useless. So the politicians signed, you know, they signed, and 20 years later, when the minerals are gone and the debt remain, that politician is retired. So he's retired or she's retired in a comfortable house, far away from potholes. All right? Yeah. So that is the cycle we must break. Okay? I think the reason why we're doing this, this is the cycle we must break. So Zimbabwe is not far away place with a strange problem. No. Zimbabwe is a mirror. This is a mirror. And what we see in that mirror should make us ask ourselves some very hard questions. That should make us ask ourselves some very, very, very hard question. So we have minerals, Namibia, we have minerals, we have needs, and we have politicians who will one day face the same choice, the very same choice. And when that comes, will we be ready? That's the question. Will we be ready? So we will have the laws in place to force transparency. Will we have the law in place to force transparency? Okay. Will we have the civil society strong enough, even in this country? Because even civil society in this country, everybody now trying to, you know, to be a friend to the ruling party so that, you know, you are in a good book. Okay? Will we have civil society strong enough to demand answers? Will we have the public educated enough to know that a road today is not worth a bankrupt country tomorrow? Yeah? Because that could happen. So, because at the end of the day, it's not about China, okay? It's not about Zimbabwe, it's not about us, it's about whether we as Africans believe that our underground wealth is a gift from our ancestor that we must manage wisely. Eh? We must manage wisely. Or whether it is just a quick fix. Eh? Is it a quick fix credit? Credit card, actually. It's a quick fix credit card to swap. You are swapping whenever we need a new road. Is that the case? Yeah. I think we need to relook. We need to get into this and relook at that critically. And my friend, a country that eats its seed corn. There's this African proverb that a country that eats its corn will have a full stomach today, an empty field tomorrow. A country that eats its corn, that eats its seed. Your seed corn will have a full stomach today and an empty field tomorrow. And Zimbabwe is standing at the crossroad. And if we are watching carefully, so are we. Let me know what you think. What do you think? Yeah, give me a call. Give me a call. Let's have a chat. What do you think about, you know, resource-based financing and what it has done in Africa? So do you think it's something that Namibia should consider, and in what way? So yeah, this is Unpacking the Day. This is your show, and this conversation is just getting started. 0833-66091 So do come through and have your opinion. What do you think?
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha kutekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafatha na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotitha mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwe po yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, onora hita tuimwe. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oneaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, a very good morning to you. Very good morning to you. If you're just joining us, our time is 42 minutes. 42 minutes past 10 o'clock, past 10. Not 10 o'clock, past 10. Yeah, it's clocked already. Time flies, né? It's already, oh my good lord. My goodness. I didn't see that. All right. Do come through. I think it's something that, worth looking at, worth discussing. In terms of African government or African state, you know, swapping their underground wealth with infrastructure development, yeah, by foreign companies or foreign firm, yeah. So, and we discuss all the ins and out of why that could be very dangerous, and why that could be profitable, you know. Yeah, so, and the views of the stakeholders, you know, the views of the stakeholders, that the right, probably the right word. Yeah, let's look at our last, you know, maybe this would, yeah, that would be our last, you know, our last stories. And this one, I think we have a deal on the table. So this is about a deal on the table, a $15 million deal that could change the story of our poor, story of our poor forever. So I want you to sit tight, turn up the volume a little bit, you know, and let's unpack this one properly, okay? Let's do this. Now, the headline says that the China Coal target major Namibian cobalt deposit in $15 million deal. It's in the daily publications. So what does that mean? An Australian company called Celsius Resources has agreed to sell its mining project near Opuo. So we're talking about its mining project. An Australian company called Celsius Resource has agreed to sell its mining project near Opuo. That's up in Kunene, if you are new in Namibia, to a Chinese state-owned mining giant, you know, called China Coal. Okay? So the price, $15 million, that roughly $280 million, give or take, depending on the exchange rate. And what is the ground? What is in the ground? what are they selling for? So Celsius claimed there is about 259,000 tons of cobalt and 970,000 tons of copper, plus now zinc as well. So they are even calling it the biggest cobalt deposit outside the DRC. You know, Savane Tunomite Dapota, you don't know what put that. Now you're thinking, okay, if it's that, if you're saying that this is the biggest cobalt deposit outside the DRC, and you're only selling it to $280 million. It's not even billion, it's Namibian dollars. What is going on here? So, okay, let's look at that. Maybe let's, that's already my thinking. Okay, what is going on here? Okay. So, and now, who owns the project? Up until now, as I said, it's an Australian company called Celsius Resources, held 95% of it, you know. They own 95% of it through a local subsidiary, this local subsidiary called Opua Combat Pty. All right? So, but the Australian have decided, now they have decided, you know what? We want to focus on our gold and copper business in Philippines. So we are selling. So they are selling. And now, my friend, let me ask you a question. And I want you to really think about it. $15 million for the largest cobalt, you know, deposit outside of the DRC. Republic of Congo in Africa. And that's one thing that bothers me a little bit. Does that sound right for you? Does that really sound right to you? So because when I hear that number, okay, my alarm bells start ringing, all right? My alarm bells start ringing. Cobalt is the metal that power electric cars, batteries. You know, we talk about the Teslas, the BYD, you know, all of them. Cobalt is what goes into your smartphone today. Yeah, it's what goes into your smartphone batteries and your laptop batteries, you know? So this is one of the most fought over minerals on the planet right now. So this is something that, you know, everyone, the American want, the European want, right? The American wants it, the European want it, the Chinese want it, the Japanese want it, everyone wants it. And that means every country is now fighting to get their hands on cobalt. Right now. And right now, more than half of the world cobalt come from where? Come from out of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Yeah? We are the second in Africa. And when you listen to that amount, and China refines most of that cobalt in its factories back home, not even in Congo. China is the middleman between the mine in Korezi and the battery in your electric car in California. So if you can understand, but the other thing is that last year, the Congolese government said. Maybe you can understand it in this context and where China is actually going. So last year, the Congolese government said, hold on. We are going to control how much cobalt leaves our country. At least someone realized that, you are taking more than what you should. All right? We're going to now do controlling. We are the one who are going to do control. So they introduced export quotas. Now, which means the tap got tighter, all right? So, and when the tap got tighter, for the biggest customer now, which is China, so the biggest customer start looking for the new tap. The one of Congo It's a little bit tighter. It's a close a little bit. Now they started looking for a new tap. You know where they look at? They enter Namibia, they enter Opuo. So if you look at the deal now, if you look at this deal now, this deal is not really about $15 million. Okay? The deal is about, you know, it's about China. Yeah? China spreading its risk. So spreading its risk is called diversification of supply. Yeah? Diversification of supply. So meaning, don't put all your eggs in one Congolese basket. Okay? Get some eggs from Namibia. Get some eggs from Madagascar. Get some from anywhere or somewhere you can. Wherever you can. Yeah? That's what China is doing. Diversification of supply. Eh? Don't just concentrate on Congo basket. Eh? What happened? What if something happened there? So, that's why they enter Namibia. They enter Opuo. And the truth here is, while the Americans, so we have to understand in a bigger picture here, the Americans are still talking about, you know, engaging Africa and holding summits, as we have seen, the Chinese are quietly actually signing the papers and paying the deposit already, like in Zimbabwe. Yeah? So that is the geopolitical race for critical minerals, and Africa, including us, Namibia, is the playing field. We are the playing field. But there are also positive those. It's not all negatives, you know. They are also positive, to be fair, right? The positive side is this: Namibia is not yet a major cobalt producer. We are not yet that big in terms of that. Like we now more or less going, we looking at oil. So the American Geological Survey say only DRC and Madagascar are the serious cobalt, you know, suppliers in Africa. So if this mine actually open, it could put Namibia on the map again in terms of cobalt. So it could mean that, as I said, the positive could mean also that there could be job in Kunene. So there could be job in Kunene. It could mean road and water infrastructure and skills for young people. So we do not have the billion needed. As Namibian, we don't have the billion needed to dig this hole ourselves. Yeah? We don't. So we need foreign investors. Yeah? We need foreign investors, and that part is real. It's real that we need foreign investors. And we cannot just chase away every investors and then complain about unemployment. So we gotta be realistic. So, but here's the question though, okay? Are we going to be, for example, are we gonna be partners on this? Eh? Or just landlord? It's like this. Or we become just landlords who collect rent. Which, how do you collect rent? With your tax revenues and royalties. And because if Chinaco digs up the cobalt and put it on the truck, ship it straight to, you know, to China and leave us with a hole in the ground and a few temporal security jobs, then I think we have failed. We have failed. If that's how it's going to work, then we have failed. Yeah? Are they building a refinery? This is something that we talk all about all the time. Are they building a refinery here to process the metal? Yeah? Or are we just the backyard where they come to fetch, you know, to fetch the rocks? Yeah? Now, the report says Celsius hope the project becomes a major supplier to the battery industry. But, okay, it does not say the battery industry will be in Namibia, though. didn't say that it will be Namibia. So there is a big difference between supplying rocks and building a factory. So the deal is not finished yet. So it's still needing many approval. Celsus shareholders must say yes, and the exploration license must be renewed, and environmental clearance must be granted. So all this need to be done. Need to happen. And here at home, Namibia Competition Commission, the Bank of Namibia and the Ministry of Trade must also approve this, okay? Good. And that is our gate. So we have someone at the gate. So they must also approve it. So, but my question is, when you think of this, it has been long, man. Okay? It has been long. When last did these bodies, that are listed here, the Competition Commission, the Bank of Namibia, you know, and all the ministers, when was the last time the body like that say no to a big foreign mining deal? Have you ever heard that? You know, a big foreign mining deals where you say, no. I'm not saying, okay, the thing is that I'm not saying they just stamp everything, okay? I'm not saying they just stamp everything. I'm asking, ask the right questions? Yeah? And what I'm asking that is that are they saying, yes, but here is what Namibia wants in return? Because with many other minerals, we don't see those. So we want more share of our minerals. Because if we just stick boxes, we are not protecting our homes. We are not protecting our house. If we just tick boxes. Okay? All right. Let me give you another angle to this. Okay? Let me give you another angle to think about. Now, the DRC dominate cobalt mining. Yet, if you look at so many years of digging in that country, there's so many years of digging, and the Congolese people are still among the poorest in the world. So the wealth lives on the ship, and the politicians get, you know what they get? The brown envelopes. Yeah. So, but what happened to the people? The people still get, when you look at sometimes people in Congo digging up the full of dust, the people get dust. Eh? So we Namibians like to say we are different. Sometimes we like to say we are different. We have a better governance. But the temptation is there. The temptation is there. The pressure is there. When a foreign government comes knocking with a checkbook, it's easy to forget the small people. It is easy to forget the small people. So, and what about the environment? Those are very important issues. Opuo is in Kunene, and that's a dry land. Water is gold in Kunene, like anywhere actually in Namibia. So mining uses a lot of water.